Mary the Penance Church of Christ Scientist in Oakland. Our speaker comes from the beautiful tropical island of Trinidad. He has been a Christian Science practitioner, devoting his life to the healing ministry. Mr. Critchlow has chosen to speak on the subject, Divine Love is the Only Mind. What a privilege to present to you Albert Critchlow.
Thank you warmly, Mrs. Morrison. And thank you, loving friends, for the beauty and the warmth of your welcome. And I mean that in both senses of the word. I was going to say that I admired the great influence that you have over your weatherman. I'm going to say it anyway, because I feel impelled to try to repay you in the very currency. So won't you come fly with me down to our islands in the sun, to the turquoise waters of the Caribbean Sea, to Trinidad, with its capital city, christened by the Spaniards, Port of Spain, sitting at the water's edge and backdropped by tall green mountains. And a little northwards of this city lies my little hometown of Petit Valley, so named by the French. Petit Valley is a left bowl of a garden, nestling at the foothills, hills covered with giant flowering trees, and not far away, the golden sands of a palm-fringed tropical beach. Well, it is in this setting I walked along the streets one day and saw some people fleeing in terror in the direction opposite to that I was taking. I pressed on and soon learned that there was an escapee from the lunatic asylum running amok in the area. I continued on and presently turned a nearby corner, and wham, there I collided with the fellow. There we were, face to face, eyeball to eyeball. In his right hand, he held a huge, shining knife. You call it a machete, we say a cutlass, high above my head. The shouts of terror from the onlookers merely added to the serious drama of this situation. I looked this fellow fully in the eye, and I heard me telling him, "You can't hurt me. I loved you." And more clearly than I had ever done before, I realized the love I was talking about is the love that is God, the love that is the only mind. I'm told we stood there immobile for several moments, and then a beautiful thing took place. The arm that held the weapon lowered slowly to his side. The grasp loosened, and the weapon clattered harmlessly to the pavement. Right at that moment, two uniformed male nurses came up and led the fellow away calmly. Divine Mind had expressed itself as all-caring divine love. The power of the truth that saved that situation, I had glimpsed from my study of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. When I began the study of Christian Science, I learned that God is mind, and that this mind is divine love. And one of my favorite sentences from this textbook was Mrs. Eddy's statement, divine love, always has met and always will meet every human need. And scarcely a day went by, but I was proving the efficacy of this wonderful truth. For example, one day back home in Trinidad, I was poised for a high dive off a cliff overlooking a beautiful mountain lake. What I didn't know was that during my absence away from the island, heavy rains had brought down a great deal of debris, silt, sand, leaves, and lian, shallowing the depth of the water considerably. Lians are those natural ropes you recognize as Tarzan's means of getting from tree to tree. However, I took off in what I considered my best Olympic form, cut the water with scarcely a splash, and knifed deep into this bed of debris. Not only was I somewhat stunned, but my body became terribly enmeshed in the coils of these lians, these natural ropes. I struggled furiously to free myself, but the more I struggled, the more hopelessly entangled I became. And it seemed as though I had swallowed gallons of water. And to all appearances, it looked like the end had come. I was drowning. But even in that extremity, I saw so clearly that my need wasn't oxygen. My need, my human need, was and always will be divine love. And right at that instant, this beautiful thought came to me. Unfathomable mind is expressed. The depth, breadth, height, might, majesty, and glory of infinite love fill all space. That is enough. Well, that was enough, because my consciousness became so illuminated with the fact that it wasn't a so-called element named water filling space, but infinite love filling all space and caring for me. And then it happened so beautifully. All my struggles ceased. I became calm. And somehow, my hands came to my side, transforming me into a sort of figure one. Exactly what was required. Because this enabled me to shoot through the encircling coil of the lian and literally pop to the surface of the water to hear the shouts of joy and cheer and relief coming from my relatives and friends on the nearby shore of the lake. I'm told that we were under there for several minutes and yet showed no sign of being in need of artificial respiration. God's unfathomable mind was expressed as divine love. I must confess, however, that before this experience, my gratitude for Christian science centered largely on the receipt of the loaves and fishes, the material benefits. But as time went by, I began to see the deeper issues. I began to see that our need can never be material because our true state is spiritual. And it dawned on me that despite the arguments being put forth by the physical senses, the truth of any situation is that at all times, the spiritual constitutes the real. That God, Spirit being the giver, can only provide spiritual requirements. So it was necessary for me to see through the shadow of material calamity to the spiritual state of instant, ever-present reality. Like when I see a shadow, I look to see what the shadow is of. And the turning away from the shadow, I behold the reality. So by degrees, my grasp on human needs began to become clearer until I arrived at the point of proof of my understanding that divine love always has met and always will meet every human need, because that need is divine love. As I've indicated previously, before this incident, human needs always appeared to be some material thing, some human requirement. Maybe I wanted a car. Perhaps I needed a house, a lawnmower. Or maybe I yearned for a better status in my job, or dozens of other seemingly worthwhile objectives. But with the power of truth literally saving me from drowning, came the illumination that our first requirement, our real need, is always spiritual. I began to see that as a metaphysician, I had to look beyond things and thoughts, beyond things and events, to thoughts and motives, even to the spiritual reality where love, as mind, is in perfect control. That the real need, our real need, is always for a better realization of divine love ever-present, divine love omnipotent, divine love omniscience, as the mind that there only is. This change of thought from the material to the spiritual exposed the falsity of the belief that there can be any failure of good, and revealed God's all-might to supply whatever is needed. Every time, any time, all the time. As this experience came, as you say here in the United States, a whole new ball game opened up. Why, of course, man isn't a separate entity, living, moving, and having his being apart from or outside of God, who is mind. Man is a part of the divine system, the divine creation, a part of this divine mind, which gives to all life, individuality, and identity, presenting a completeness and a continuity which has no opposite state. Man's function, then, is indispensable to the allness, the wholeness of God. And this is the great truth discovered by Mary Baker Eddy. If God is all I saw, then it was not possible for God's allness to be such without me, spiritual man. And it is the logic of this coexistence, as discovered by Mary Baker Eddy, that gives power to our Christianity. The correlation of God and man. No man, no God. Can you conceive of a father without son or daughter? Can you conceive of effect or cause without effect? Can you conceive of principle without idea? So it is this inseparability of God and man that lay behind the power of Jesus' statement, I and my Father are one. So here was my exemplar. Here I was being beckoned to go and do likewise. I saw that Jesus' acknowledgement was perfectly continuous in the matter of his relationship with his Father, his perfect inseparability. So therefore, I had to see first that I acknowledge this divine fact, second, claim this wonderful truth, and third, utilize this power. Jesus' acknowledgement of his interrelationship with God was so thorough that he could give thanks for results even before the results became apparent. He claimed without one iota of doubt the irresistible power of his father-mother, and his utilization of this truth exemplified itself in the statement, Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. So we have to look more closely to see what is meant when we define that love which is mine. How does this wonderful truth affect your everyday situation? How do you relate to this wonderful truth? Well, this experience of mine perhaps could be of some help. I was the navigating officer on a full plane load of VIPs being ferried from the Far East to Great Britain, with intermediate stops in the Middle and the Near East. We took off from Cairo in Egypt on one of these legs of the journey to fly to Marseille in the south of France. After about 1 hour's flight over the Mediterranean, we developed engine trouble and began losing altitude. We had already passed the critical point of return, that is to say, it was easier to keep going, turn right or perhaps left, rather than turn back. So the captain requested, in technical terms, a QDM, which is to say, new stations down there listening to this broadcast, please tell us which is the nearest emergency landing field. We are in trouble. So inspired by this mind, which is love, I proceeded by virtue of dead reckoning navigation to work out such an emergency landing field and came up with Benghazi lying on our left. Almost at the same time, however, our radio operator received a signal from the island of Crete lying on our right, saying they were the nearest emergency landing field to fly to. So there we were. What were we to do? Losing height rapidly, fuel leaking alarmingly, and being faced with a most critical choice. Were we to listen to the broadcast from the island of Crete and turn to starboard and fly there? Or heed the divine direction given to the navigator and turn port and fly to Benghazi? The crew prayed silently, and unanimously we balloted to follow God's direction through the navigator. So we altered course and started flying to Benghazi. 10 minutes on this flight came another signal from the island of Crete. Ignore former transmission. Fly instead Benghazi. I needn't tell you that the depth or the height of our gratitude was such for obeying the divine direction that we felt that's what kept us aloft. We were getting closer and closer to the brink, as the flyers called the sea, when suddenly the visibility opened and right straight ahead of us was the runway. We touched down at the water's edge on the proverbial last drop of fuel, our momentum bringing us to a standstill three-quarter ways down that runway. We hadn't even enough fuel to taxi to the parking bay allotted to us. Divine mind had expressed itself as all-caring love, and our overflowing gratitude knew no bounds because we recognized that following God's unerring direction had certainly saved our lives. You see, God is always guiding and protecting us, but we have to become awake to this truth. We have to acknowledge it. We have to accept it. We have to use it in order to experience it. Love, divine mind, must be our only God, our only mind. And this is the first commandment which bases Christian science. Christian science promotes the wholeness, the allness of God. And this allness eliminates any possibility of any suppositional state to the opposite. And any such tendency could only be described as illusory, suppositional. Therefore, divine love, all power, is constantly available to offset any so-called interference or obstruction conjured up by mortal thought. And you know how the master described mortal thinking? As a liar, and the father of it, implying thereby that error always tries to simulate truth. Think of this situation. Worldwide thinking suggests for our acceptance a suppositional inharmony present called sickness. This suggestion poses itself into a belief, and the belief establishes itself as a claim. This unseen development impinges itself upon somebody, and soon we have a situation where the Christian science practitioner is needed, a case of sickness. But the sickness is never to be accepted as truth or fact. No, to do this would be to cement what you wish to dispel. So the claim must be seen as an outward sign of an inward belief, and the belief as an outgrowth of the suggestion. So by this reasoning process, by virtue of reversal, in the words of Mary Baker Eddy, we take the claim back into its native nothingness. And it is in this state of a suppositional state that we are able to eradicate the falsity. This is what Jesus did with lightning-like rapidity as soon as the claim presented itself for acceptance into his consciousness. He immediately reversed the claim back into belief and finally into the suggestion where instant dissemination, instant eradication took place. The healing is then made complete by seeing the true spiritual state right where the illusion appears to be. The truth of the matter is that right where the illusion seems to be, the perfect state of reality exists. It never changed at any time. So what we have to realize is that we must relinquish this false sense that tries to impinge itself upon our consciousness and behold the state of spirituality, good, ever-present. I should like to share with you an analogy that would illustrate how the inventions of mortal mind try to impinge themselves upon our consciousness for acceptance. The science fiction writer tells of some experiments in the field of cinematography using three-dimensional projections without a screen. That is to say, the projectors focus in an open area images and scenes in their three-dimensional configuration, which appear to be quite life-size and very real. These selected three positions in the wings of the building embracing the quadrangle on the campus. In position number one, they had the projector throwing an image of a beautiful pastoral scene. In position number two, the projectors threw an image of a Bengal tiger. And in number three, the projectors threw the image of a huge, massive masonry stone wall. A fellow student who knew nothing of the experiment was brought onto the pastoral scene. While there, walking along and admiring what he considered to be the beautiful scenery, the image of the tiger was thrown close into the area. The student, beholding the mountain tiger, became alarmed, in fact, terrified, and began to run away. But to his horror, the tiger took in pursuit. He increased his speed, but in desperation, he realized that this tiger was literally breathing down his back. When suddenly, right in front of him, he didn't know where it came from, but right there was this massive, impassable stone wall. The student cried out in terror and fell down in a dead faint. How like some of our day-to-day experiences. We amble along, and then we become affrighted the ogres projected by mortal mind, and then petrified at our seeming insurmountable. But how gratifying it is to have the true vision, the vision of the Christ, that enables us to see through these material images and to dissolve into nothingness these superimposed false pictures, to let go of the mesmerism of mortal thought and behold the reign of God. This is what Mary Baker Eddy did. She discovered by revelation the activity of mortal mind, and mortal mind's activity to impinge these hypnotic images upon our consciousness, moving us in states of unhappiness. But Mary Baker Eddy not only uncovered the machinations of mortal mind methods, he produced the spiritual antidote to overcome them. She discovered and shared with all mankind the comforter or the silence of the Christ, the Savior consciousness. He ripped away the veil of traditional theology that seeks to keep man separate from God. She reintroduced primitive Christianity and revealed the forever principle that is God and the forever idea that is man. She unveiled the beauty of the correlation and coexistence of God and man. He ushered in the Christianly scientific ear with missile-like penetrativeness of sublime perception. She revealed man as the image, the reflection of an unchanging, unchangeable God. No more the imperfect model groveling in the dust, theoretically subject to the movement of the stars, a victim of the elements, a toy of chance. No! She revealed man as having full dominion, given by our Father, Mother, Lord, the divine mind. He takes away the rituals of beseeching the Godhead to do what he has already done and is always doing for man. She showed the fallacy of trying to inform the all-knowing. And she explained that we deny God's all presence when we entertain a false sense of evil. She taught mankind to relinquish the false concept of a man-made God, man-like God, and recognize the truth of God-like man. Her teachings of God's ever-presence so infuses and inspires mankind that there is this great influence on medicine, theology, science. And man, as we said before, is beginning to understand that without him, God wouldn't be. Isn't this the comforter referred to by the Master before leaving the earthly scene? The understanding of the unity of God and man enables us to do the work and live the life the teacher did. We don't have to wait to attain full spirituality. No way. A glimpse is sufficient for a start. The maxim of all the sciences is that whatever little of any science is gleaned does not prevent the possibility of that little being practiced. In the science of mathematics, if all we knew happens to be 2 times 2 equals 4, nothing prevents that practice. In the science of music, if all that was known was the scale, nothing prevents that practice. In the science of the Christ, nothing prevents the practice of the few truths gleaned. And that's how I came into Christian Zion. On a Monday, on a Sunday, I knew nothing of Christian Zion, never even heard of it. On a Monday, was introduced to some truths. And on Tuesday, I was a practicing Christian scientist. I was writing what you call pre-college examination. In our part of the world, it would be the Cambridge School Certificate. I had had a very bad first day of a 5-day period of exams. I had studied very seriously and had come down with the belief of brain fatigue. Do you say cramming? The belief was that I had crammed too much for these exams. So I was very little use to myself, and I left the examination room, wending my way homeward, crossed in front of our public library, and decided to take a breather before continuing on. I crept into a building and flopped into a seat, and had no sooner done that than I was bolt upright once more, because on the reading table before me was a publication entitled Christian Science Sentinel. I'm told I fairly blew the silence away with the exclamation, Christian Science? Because we have been taught that Christianity and science were inimical one to the other. But according to this magazine, here they were walking hand in hand. And to make matters more interesting, there's an article written especially for young people of all things entitled Examination. I turned, in fact, I read every word of that periodical and became introduced to God as mind, capital M, and man as the expression of this mind. And for the first time, I'm seeing the word reflection with the connotation of creation. Man, the reflection of this mind. And therefore, possessing intelligence at all times. That was for me. What irrefutable logic. Gone was my inertia. My melancholia disappeared. My brain fatigue vanished. I left that building on the wings of song. Came the next day, and my exams in mathematics. A 3.5-hour paper with 16 questions. I don't know what happened, but I suddenly became aware that 3 of the 3.5 hours had just melted away, and I had only done 3 of the 16 questions. So as you can imagine, panic set in. I cold sweated. I had the shakes to such a degree I couldn't even hold my pen. So I put it down. And then the experience of the afternoon before came flooding back into my memory. And I remember reasoning that if what I read is to be taken as true, then all that I read was provable, because we had been taught that anything called science was provable. So, said I, what have I got to lose? Here we go. And instantly formed myself a theorem. Given, I said, as I had read, God is mind, capital M, and man is the expression of this mind, then my quod erat demonstrandum of this theorem, that which was required to be proven here, was that the intelligence that I needed, I already possessed. And I should like to tell you that the construction for this proof came in the most beautiful manner. Instant recall of the wonderful truths I had read. For example, intelligence is at the helm and is in charge of all actions, that no material situation or condition could possibly stop the flow, divert its course in any way, that man was inseparable from his maker, mind. And as these truths came welling back into my thoughts, I became lifted up higher and higher, mentally, spiritually, until I attained such a high level of spirituality that time, as is understood by human sense, disappeared. I picked up that pen, and not only did I complete those 13 remaining questions, but found time to review the entire paper. So long before the excellent results came, I knew I had found the pearl of great price. Divine mind had proved itself as divine love, caring for me. But over and above that was the demonstration of nowness of the divine mind. Actually, as I've since learned, in the realm of the real, that is to say, in divine reality, God, mind, creates, radiates, and encompasses all in the dimension of the now. All that is now. In truth, all our needs are being met now. And I became so illuminated, so infused with delight at discovering that the writers in the Bible endorsed and illustrated the nowness of the divine mind. So I chose three examples to share with you, one by Malachi, one by Paul, and one by John. Listen to Malachi speaking in the mouth of the Godhead. Prove me now, herewith, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And then, Paul always thrills me to bits every time I listen to him speaking to the Corinthians. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. And every Sunday in the Christian Science Church service, I'm melted into sweetness by the correlative scripture according to 1 John. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. And what about Mary Baker Eddy? Man is, not shall be, perfect and immortal. In God's infinite calculus, time and space are not. All good is here and now. Even in human philosophy, the thinker sees today as the tomorrow we were looking for yesterday, which is only another way of saying there is only now. And what about the majestic pronouncement of Ecclesiastes the preacher, just turned about a bit? That which is to be hath already been, and that which hath been is now. When earthbound thought throws off its shackles of time and the time measurement, things wondrous to human sense begin to unfold. When we relinquish self-will, self-love, and self-justification, and allow the divine will, the divine mind, to be acknowledged, wonderfully instantaneous results are obtainable. We begin to experience the ever-activity of the divine mind, the mind which is love. The Bible chronicles many beautiful examples of what happens when we let go of that limited sense of human selfhood and let in the divine. Instantaneously wonderful work results. Also, how childlikeness accepts that God acts now. Let's take Daniel. Daniel let go of the falsity of himself as a mortal concept and let in the divine truth of God's creation, in which one idea of God cannot injure or be injured by another idea of God, and the outward manifestation of this divine understanding immediately produced the perfect example of harmonious coexistence of man and beast, not beast and meatball. The three Hebrew youths, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, thrown into the burning fiery furnace, let go of the false concept that any sense of human combustion could possibly destroy the indestructible reflection, God's man, and the miracle to human sense is described that not even an hair of their head was singed, nor was there even smell of fire upon them. When Peter let go of the falsity that true man could be manacled or imprisoned, and let in the gloriously wonderful situation that God's creation is forever free, the chains fell off, the prison gate opened, demonstrating the forever fact of man's freedom as God's expression. Paul's clarity of thought about man's unassailable condition of imperishability enabled him to shake off the viper, the suppositional threat that there can be any power in divine, in so-called poison. The truth of God and man destroys the belief that would cause destruction. This surrender of mortal thought immunizes us against any threat of mortal conjecture, so long as we reflect the divine power. Mary Baker Eddy had a gloriously beautiful conception of this truth and how it is necessary to get rid of this limited human selfhood. She said to some workers in her household, "All that I have ever accomplished has been done by getting Mary out of the way and letting God be reflected. When I would reach this stone," she said, "the sick would be healed without a word." Perhaps it would be relevant in this electronic age to see that tone as the signal that comes in loud and clear on our receiving set. When precise tuning selectivity screens out the static and the graph and allows the transmission to be reflected beautifully. Of course, you realize this intercommunication is always from the transmitting station to the receiving set. Therefore, as receivers, we have to make sure that our attuning is always on the perfect wavelength, the correct channel, so as to ensure that faithful reproduction that is eminently satisfying. Of course, this is as is seen humanly, because in the divine, man, as God's expression, is never for an instant outside of or apart from the divine presence. children are known to demonstrate this facility of spiritual receptivity. So much so that the master endorsed that if we wish to enjoy heaven, harmony, it is necessary for us to have our mentally spiritual state resemble that of the childlike condition. Our daughter was not yet 6 years of age when her younger brother pushed his finger into the whirling blades of a lawn mowing machine. The first joint of that finger was almost completely severed. It hung only by the skin on the back of the finger. Tenderly taking hold of the injured finger in her right fist and holding it firmly, she sat with him on the lawn and loudly proclaimed what she had learned in Sunday school. It was something written by Mrs. Eddy. There is no sensation in matter. And very seriously, she inquired of her younger brother, "Have you got that?" And between his tears and his screaming, he indicated that he had. She then proceeded to pray with ideas from what Mrs. Eddy calls in the textbook, the scientific statement of being. The first sentence was the only one in its correct place. But the whole substance of that message was all there. And her prayer was answered. When the accident first occurred, the children's governess telephoned a certain friend of the family. And when he arrived, sometime shortly afterwards, the finger was completely joined. This surgeon confesses that he had the suspicion for many years that we had called in a fellow surgeon and had him perform an emergency operation before he arrived on the scene. There you have it. Absolute radical reliance of the Christ-like child thought produced this beautifully instantaneous healing. This was surely healing by the mind, which is love. You see, there are no adult fears or doubts to be dislodged in the childlike thought. Therefore, the divine presence is made manifest instantly. Wasn't this the childlikeness of which the Master spoke that we should seek to have? That sense of utter dependency on the divine concept that is relinquished, the divine concept that is present when the human is relinquished. That sense, that trust, that knows no doubt and relies unswervingly on the spiritual power that's here, now, always. Letting go of the human thought and becoming conscious of the divine is utilizing that mind, which is love. That was done in the case of the insane experience, where the falsities of human belief were eradicated by the instant recognition of divine mind ever present. The plain experience, where unerring direction made itself manifest whenever the divine mind was so acknowledged. In the examination, instant display of all present intelligence. Now, in the drowning, the false belief eradicated by the divine truth that God, unfathomable mind, is expressed. So in every instance of human experience, the salient point to be gained is the awareness of what we might call the three essentials of discipleship: acknowledging, claiming, and utilizing the truth that divine love is our only need. Therefore, only the mind which is love can meet our needs, everyone's needs. And I can think of no better closure than Mrs. Eddy's words. Divine love is our hope, shield, and strength. We have nothing to fear when love is at the helm of thought, but everything to enjoy on earth and in heaven. I love you all. Good afternoon.
You have just heard a Christian Science lecture by Albert Critchlow entitled Divine Love is the Only Mind, brought to you by members of 10th Church of Christ Scientist Oakland and 4th Church of Christ Scientist San Francisco. If you would care to write to KBRG regarding these Christian Science lectures, your letters will be sent to the sponsoring churches and in turn to the lecturer.